Intervju Radija Študent.
Dobar dan, lep pozdrav v terminu za Eriš intervju. Tokrat gostimo Greja Filestein. Is it Filestein or Filestein?
Pronounce it how you like. Both work for me.
Both work. Excellent. So, torej, Greja Filesteina, ki bo nocoj, mislim, da malo po deseti nastopil v Menzi pri Koritu. Lahko bi ga napovedal na več različnih načinov, ampak bomo kar vprašali Greja, torej, kako bi sam sebe opredelil. So, Grej, we could you know, introduce you in many different ways. One would be as an activist, then a traveler, a video artist, sound artist, and musician. What do you feel the most? Is it musician overall who wins?
No, not. I don't give this kind of primacy to music. It's the thing that I'm most known for because it's something that you can categorize and then sell in one way or another. Mm-hmm. So when I tour, it's, you know, usually as a musician in musical spaces. But even then, the art that got me there is usually involves graphics, involves video, involves a certain amount of activism or social intervention. So it's all part of the kind of the story, really. It's what I do with my time, whatever I feel like doing.
Mm-hmm. And today, accompanying you is Nova. She's you're a vocalist at the last album, Lut.
Yeah.
Did you meet before that, or was this the first time?
No, we did a tour before, like 2.5 years ago, mm-hmm. already, before we made the songs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you both worked together, so on other songs before this album. Or was that when you met just for live,
performing live, yes.
Mm-hmm. And then you decided
and
to...
And then decided to develop the song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how did you two meet?
We met in Jakarta when he was make a stop by for Australian tour. So mm-hmm. he was like contacting me like through mutual friends from Australia. And then they were like, oh yeah, he's coming to Indonesia, and then can you make gigs? And then I made him two gigs in Indonesia. 2009.
And this organizing tours, I know that you are now, at least I read that it's supposed to be a 1 year long tour during which you will visit all the continents. Is that true?
Yeah.
And how does one, you know, organize a tour that lasts for 1 year? Is it like Nova said, just gigs coming up as you tour, or?
Well, you've organized about 3 months out. I may have been speaking humbly at saying that it's going to be 1 year. It'll probably be closer to 2 years. We'll just see how things go. But you know, about 3 months out, everything just gets organized. Things fall into place. Some things fall into the cracks just 1 or 2 weeks before. But normally it's. I work with a number of different agencies and whatnot, you know, all the business stuff, it's a bit boring, but so I go to North America already, we've already played in Egypt, we'll be in Istanbul soon, we're touring in Europe together for 3 months, later we'll go to Asia, the two of us, and tour in Asia. So sometimes it's in different configurations, because I also tour with the cellist, and when we can, we tour as a trio with the cello and with Nova mm-hmm. here.
This cellist is Brent, probably?
Well, it's really odd, but the cellist depends on the geography, really, because I'm working uh-huh. with Brent, the Eastern United States, another cellist named Christine for the Western, with a woman named Amalie, who's based in Lyon, France. Mm-hmm. And she tours with me a lot and is on the album, and she's, say, the main cellist, so in Europe I would tour with her.
Mm-hmm. And you worked with Andy Moore as well from The X.
Yeah.
He's a very well-known musician here, especially at the radio station. Oh, and cool. How did you meet him?
You know, we met through a common friend who is DJ Rupture, and he just, I guess he knew about my music. We actually met after he put one of my stickers on his guitar, like right on the front of it, and it was in his press photo that he was using for touring, and everybody was like, hey man, there's this close-up of his guitar with your sticker on it, and I wrote, and I was like, hey, and he's like, yeah, I know your music from DJ Rupture, he gave it to me, and I like it, and so naturally when I finally got around to, you know, years later making this album, I wrote and said, hey, would you like to participate on one of these tracks?
Mm-hmm. And he was all for it.
Oh yeah, he's a really nice guy and very open to experimentation and new things. Of course, mm-hmm. that's what makes him so amazing.
Right. So, you know, initially maybe we wouldn't put him in a context in a music with you, you know, with your past albums, though, as you say, he's really open towards music and doesn't make. And you said that you don't like to be put in a certain box neither, but when it comes to aesthetics of your music, it could be drawn, you know, from electronic music, hip-hop, world music from, you know, South Asia to South America. So maybe what music were you listening to when you were growing up? You know, how did you develop this big interest in this all variations of music?
Well, when I was a really young kid, I wasn't really interested in music. I didn't find the music I wanted, so I didn't like music. Mm-hmm. That's because as a kid, you don't have the option to explore and find the music they might actually want. And then, of course, I finally encountered like punk music and underground music. And when I was like a teenager, I was like, yeah, this is something, this has a soul. And
do you remember a particular band, maybe?
Oh, everything from the whole movement of like punk music, from the Dead Kennedys to
Misfits.
You know, when I was a little bit late for that because I'm not quite old enough to have been there for the original wave of punk music. But as I got older, I discovered it from older, you know, brothers and sisters and things like that. And so that kind of opened up the door of like, wow, you know, music can have a lot of passion and soul and be aggressive and anti-system and find new ways to express itself. And then later, I started traveling a lot, just being curious about the world. And I started studying different forms of percussion. Mm-hmm. And I studied tabla in India for quite a while, which is the only formal training I have. I studied with a number of different kind of masters in India to get that down and studied a bunch of other kind of street rhythms in places like Rio de Janeiro and Istanbul and Morocco. I would go and work with musicians there and try to study what I could in a more informal kind of context. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so all that, I was doing years, I was gathering field recordings, I was traveling with a mobile field recording system, recording noises, street sounds, trains, announcements, as well as studying the percussion. And later, when this project finally coalesced, when electronic music became more accessible, like something you could fit in a backpack, laptop, microphone, a couple of sound cards, things like that, then I was like, hey, I can make something now, something nomadic, something portable that I can bring everywhere and produce as I travel. Mm-hmm. And that's really when Philistine came about.
Right. You know, at the new album, there's an inline that says it was recorded and edited in Barcelona, Salatiga, Malang, New York, Lyon, Seattle, Cairo, Tokyo. So it was basically recorded all over the world. How does that work for you? You know, how can you probably go there, live in a particular place for a certain amount of time, or?
Yeah, you know, I used to move a lot slower. It was used to be more like go and live somewhere for months. And now it's, you know, the whole world seems like it's accelerating, and I'm part of that, unfortunately. I'm trying to put on the brakes and learn something from the whole kind of slow movement, but it's I haven't found the way yet. And so in previous albums, it was like that, but now I find that I have to tour a lot. There's more demand for what I'm doing as I'm more known. And so naturally I'm just moving around a lot quicker. So now I tend to be places more for weeks instead of months. Mm-hmm. But because I've been to those places many times before, I don't feel like a stranger, like I'm just showing up like, hey, where's the music? Who are the people? I need to meet them. It's like a show up, I'm already staying with friends, I already know the musicians I want to work with, I've already heard of them, they already heard of me. And so things actually happen a lot quicker. So I get just as much done in a few weeks as it used to take in months, let's say. Mm-hmm.
So it's much more than just sort of audio tourism, you know, when you go to these places and just absorb all the sounds from environment. You actually go there with the plan, I will do this and this.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't go anywhere without a lot of stuff confirmed before I even arrive at this point. Mm-hmm. Both gigs, performances, collaborations, usually some kind of political talk or some kind of engagement in the case of like longer stays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe, Nova, can you tell us what sort of music were you listening to when you were growing up? It was probably more traditional Asian music.
Yeah, because I studied when I was in junior, elementary school. I studied in a really Japanese elementary school. So mm-hmm. the basic of the education is a Japanese philosophy. So I learned like the Japanese music, gamelan, learned the dancing, like, you know, those kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's how I grew up. And then I grew up in a really Christian family as well. Like my grandpa was a priest, so I listened to a lot of, you know, music.
Church
music. And then mm-hmm. my father is a musician. He's a guitarist, a rock guitarist. And then he's quite well known in the 80s. So I went to a lot of his concerts as well. So kind of various music into and become right now.
How did this duo work? You know, you just got together and decided to make songs, or you said that you were primarily intended as a live show, that you would play songs live, if I understood correctly. So, no, how did this thing work? How did you decide to work together?
Well, I think it's all about the how the first is all about the personalities between us, you know, not like because we have the same background or whatever, but first it's like we are, you know, have the same perspective, the same philosophy, whatever you call it, and then we'll decide, okay, let's do some music together, you know. Do you want to explain more?
Yeah, I feel the same way.
Yeah.
At the time that I met Nova, she was doing kind of more like backpacker hip-hop, but in Indonesian, mm-hmm. which was great. But then because it's so narrative, that kind of hip-hop is like really about storytelling and poetry, right? If you don't understand it. So to adapt to performing for international audiences, we've been like, she's singing a lot more with me than rapping. Mm-hmm. And kind of splitting it between singing and rapping because, you know, like relying more on his voice rather than on the writing. And yeah, as far as like the collaboration, the most important thing to me is the chemistry of just getting along with someone and sharing the same philosophy about you know, about politics, about culture, about how to move through the world, how to treat each other and the rest of the world with respect.
Mm-hmm. You know, just the other day, it was this week that this radio station, Radio Student, celebrated 43rd anniversary. And we went check what sort of music was coming out in 68, 69. And it seems that, you know, it was a revolution music-wise as well. Not just because of the way they said it, but they actually had something to say. Do you feel that today there are still musicians who have something to say, or is music just being more put on the margin maybe today? Because when you go see what sort of albums came out in 68, 69, it's all albums that we still remember today, you know, that put really, who left a big mark in music, not just in that. And I don't know how you see the music today, you know, contemporary music. Is it still, does it have something to say?
Well, there's many different ways I can answer that question, but one of which would be that what I mentioned earlier about culture constantly accelerating is that everything, the life cycle of something now is much shorter. So in fact, back then, and say pre-internet and pre-rapid technologies of exchange, the lifespan of something would be much longer. In fact, it seems like it might even be forever. Like if you made something from 1968 when they founded this radio station, people will still be listening to it a little bit now. But as time goes by, the life cycle of a song gets shorter and shorter, of an album. People don't even have the attention span to listen to an album. You know, it's like we've condensed our thoughts down to a few characters that we exchange on social medias, and we condensed our music down to something that lasts, its usefulness to us is about a week or a month. And that is in part could be responsible, the artist for that, but in part it's the responsibility of the civilization, the culture, and the consumer. But I think we've been pretty heavily screwed by the way that the industry works, by the way that industry period works, by the way that commerce and capitalism has turned everything into products. And so even the idea of like social messages or revolution is now just another commodity that might be packaged into a music to make it seem somehow more thrilling or exciting. And so therefore it seems like when you actually do find something that is revolutionary or is insurrectionist or engaging, that it already seems false. It already seems like another part of their slick advertising programs, because we've had so much falseness sold to us that it's hard to find message in amongst all the noise. The signal to noise ratio is so bad now. Mm-hmm. But there are quality people making quality music and engaged music, of course, now, just like ever. But it's buried in all this noise. I say noise in the bad way, though I really do like noise. But there's two uses of noise, let's say. I like noise music, but I'm talking about noise as in cultural noise, like you can't see or find anything of value in it.
Mm-hmm. So it's pretty much up to an individual to find those interesting things in all of this.
Well, it's more and more about the word of mouth, right? It's when we're saturated with information on all sides, the only thing that you can value now is what comes out of the mouth of a friend. I mean, all my music comes directly from friends at this point, because I can't filter the world in any other way.
Mm-hmm. Are you still actively involved as an activist? You had a collective with, it was a sort of marching band, and you attended, I think, the protests in Seattle in 2000, is that true?
Yes.
Are you still involved with that collective?
That project had to commit a mass suicide in a spectacular way to end the project, because
when that happened,
I should probably explain what the project is a little bit and then explain why you should end projects like this when the time comes. Mm-hmm. Because this project was born in Seattle 1999 for the protests against the World Trade Organization, this big financial institution that mm-hmm. kind of this meta institution that organizes the world's trade and commerce. And it's an easy target for protest because, in fact, it's kind of a nexus of corporate and government power. So all these bad folks are in one place, so it's a good place to go and raise a ruckus. So we were there, and it's kind of a historic protest. It's one of those that marks, you know, the history of protests. And we found a social usefulness from that moment forward, because there was a number of other protests that followed it in Prague and in Washington, D.C., and Scotland, and all over the world, in Cancun, Mexico. And so we became kind of a soundtrack for this wave of kind of counter or alter globalization protests. And in that, we had a really good utility. Just like in a village in Africa, or even in a club in Ljubljana, you know, music has a social role. It has a function to play in the society. And so our social role was to be like an accelerant for the fire that was burning, this fire of indignation at the time of this alter globalization movement. And so, as that movement crumbled, when September 11th, when those two buildings fell, the whole world's attention shifted, and it became this kind of primitive battle between this Christian and Islam power struggle between these two prodigal sons, between Bush and, if we believe this, you know, it could be all a fiction, as we all know. But and then the whole alter globalization movement kind of crumbled under the weight of this of war. Constant and all-encompassing war worldwide. And so the foot shifted, and we found ourselves without a context, without thousands of people around. What do you need a marching band for in the streets? And so it's better that we all go work on other projects. And that's what we did. We broke up, split up the project, and I did Philistine and other people did other things.
Mm-hmm. But you know, you are still an activist now through Philistine. Are other members still involved in that way?
Yes, other people from the band. So, say the band was usually around 20 people. A good 5 to 7 of those people were our lifelong activists doing work in other ways and still doing mm-hmm. either culture or music, or many of them doing politics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Were you involved somehow in the current Occupy movement in any way?
Yes. Well, I could see the Occupy movement as an extension of the 15M movement, 15M or Indignados in Spain. And I was heavily, heavily involved in that last year. I was trying to mix down this album, and it would have been out maybe 6 months earlier if it weren't for what was happening in Spain last spring, because it was impossible to ignore. I live right next to Plaza Catalunya, and every night at 8:30, everyone would start walking by, banging on pots and pans, and I would come down, I'd bring my drums down to the street, bring my megaphones, and we would, you know, create like the heart, the corazón of the plaza to propel the rhythm. And then afterwards, there'd be meetings all night long. We're talking tens of thousands of people on a nightly basis. It wasn't something that you wanted to lock yourself in a studio and be like, yeah, I'm making a great work of art, of revolutionary art. And you're like, hey, the revolution is going on, man. Get out of your studio. So yeah, I was involved in that. And of course, I went on tour in America and was checking out the Occupy there. But amazing, wonderful thing. But it felt like a kind of a shadow compared to what had happened in Spain. And you might even consider that Shane was, that Spain was an echo of what had happened in Tahrir and in Tunisia.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so thank you very much. Unfortunately, we are running out of time. So maybe just one last question for Nova. How does the Philistine project now works on a stage as a duo? Do you play composed songs that are basically on this last album, or do you tend to improvise?
We did a lot of improvisation, especially Gray, like, I know that he doesn't really like things that, you know, like what you already hear on the album, you know, like you will get something different on stage as well. And then before we had really basic concept, like me just singing 3 songs or something. Mm-hmm. But now I'm pretty busy, you know, we put more instruments, so the electronic and the instruments now is kind of balanced. It's not like all electronic, so we put like a lot of instrument, drumming, whatever is.
Mm-hmm. This is more like loop-based thing, because I know in the past maybe you used that. I think I read something about it, that it was sort of you use percussion to start this loop process. I don't know, maybe I
I use some loops, of course, but it's each song is its own story. Some of them have a long sequence. Some of them have tiny chunks of sequences. There's a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot of live video as well that we haven't mentioned, but
we try to put more human side than the electronic in this live set now.
Even though it's a kind of sounds at least electronic, it's still an album you can perform live with acoustic instruments. Well, excellent. Sounds excellent. Thank you very much for stopping by in our studio.
Cool.
Thank you very much for having us.
Looking forward to your gig tonight. Thank you. Okay. To je bil torej dvojec Filastin oziroma Filastin in Panova. Kot rečen, dvojec lahko slišite danes večer v Menzi pri koritu, vse skupaj se začne malo po 10. Intervju sem pripravil Goran. Lep pozdrav.
Intervju Radija Študent.